Don't Give Up Your Day Job, a local musician's guide by me, Paul Gillings. An educational and sometimes humorous look at what it's like to be part of the local music scene. Hello and welcome to another episode of Don't Give Up Your Day Job, and I'm with some people today who might well have already given up their day jobs but for completely different reasons, as having lived out their natural working lives and now started a second career in music or otherwise. They'll correct me in a moment, but going around the room to my left, I have Mr. Tony Graham. Hello Tony.
Good morning, how you doing?
All right mate, nice to see you again, thanks for coming over. And the mysterious Mr. H, he shall be known as. Is it all right to call you H?
You certainly can. Good morning to you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for coming over. It's such short notice as well. 9:20 he called me this morning. We're now at 10:30.
Last minute marshal.
And back for more punishment is the dulcet and, mumbling Danny R. How are you, buddy?
No, very well, thanks.
You don't have to actually mumble.
Having a mumble.
It's really fine. But yeah, thanks for coming along, everybody. So we're going to hopefully be talking about what it's like and how to run and what to do with a local event. Specifically, I'd like to talk to Tony about the open mic and why we're talking to Tony about that, and we'll find it in a minute, and talk to H about running local events. To find out why I need to talk to you guys about that, if Tony, could you tell us what it is you've been doing musically lately and how we know each other as well, please?
Well, obviously, we played in a band together for a few years. Must be 25 years ago now.
Yeah.
That was Barrel of Monkeys. And
bloody hell.
That even got to going to festivals and stuff, didn't it? So yeah. that was quite good fun.
Mm.
But right at the moment, I'm doing two open mics, one in the Oddfellows in Galston and one in Bar One. And we've also got a totally acoustic night once a month in the Entertainer.
Oh, wow, you brought that back. Because I remember,
yes.
I think, because getting on to how we know each other, I believe we first met when I went to an acoustic sort of, well, it was almost like a sing-around.
It was exactly that.
Which seemed to me like Folk Days was a precursor to what we now know as the open mic and acoustic jam session. So basically, we'd all sit round, for those that don't know, the uninitiated, we all just sit round in a circle, someone would kick off, specifically a folk tune, usually Sean on the fiddle, launch into the Jolly Beggar Man or whatever it was, or Devil Amongst the Tailors or something like that, and then everyone that knew it would join in.
Yes, exactly that. And that we were hoping that it would start to sort of build back into that level again. I mean, it started off, that one's sort of not very well attended at the moment, but it's early days yet, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that was, I mean, when you're talking about was when John Hughes had the Entertainer.
Okay.
And so we're back into...
Not the Hollywood director, John Hughes. He didn't start in little old Galston.
He didn't start.
running a pub and then decided, no, damn this, I'm off to run a big Hollywood teenage movie.
I'm going to Hollywood, yeah.
That wasn't him at all.
No, John was the drummer in the band that was in various guises with Phil Harvey and Mick Burrows.
Okay.
And they last in last version, I think, was called Gasoline and Matches.
Oh, right. Excellent. Sounds like a blues band. I was going to say sounds like a blues band. I vaguely remember Mick, acoustic guitarist, big frizzy hair, used to play down the... What was the pub at the end of Broad Row?
Mitre.
The Mitre.
Yes, because I had a flat just round the corner for there, and there was he used to play in there quite a bit, didn't
and
he?
And they used to have the blues nights in the Lady Haven.
The Lady Haven, yes, had a good blues jam session in there as well. Awesome. Okay.
But all these people all sort of know each other and they all mill about in these events, don't they? So
yeah.
But the two open mics that we're running, they are with a PA fully plugged in. Everything,
I wanted to get onto that in a bit. You supplied the PA and stuff like that. That'll be another thing. So I want to get on to asking you in a bit about if anyone out there wanted to start running around one, what they got to. But you also, you're in a band, you're an accomplished musician, you play about 20-odd instruments. You've got a mandolin, there's nothing you can't play. I've seen you do it all. I've seen you on drums.
Don't want me on drums. Rubbish drummer.
So what is it musically you're doing then, band-wise?
Yeah, well, band-wise, this is go out as either a duo or a four-piece band called Percy's Pearls.
Cool.
And Steve Mead, who is the songwriter, It's all his original material.
Fantastic.
And so, you know, you throw the odd covers. If it's a pub gig, somebody wants something thrown in there, we'll do the odd cover here and there.
Yeah.
But essentially, the whole reason for the band is as a vehicle for Steve's music. And he's got some, I have to say, some amazing stuff that he's written.
Yeah.
And we're gradually developing that, and at the moment just started recording some of it as well.
Oh, great.
Because it's never been recorded.
Because you said to me about a couple of months ago, you were asking me what sort of performing rights and stuff like that, and I think that's a whole other show for another time, but how to get into that, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
We start scratching the surface of that, but I'm really glad that you're doing some original music, mate.
Yeah, that's it, which is good fun. And we've done a few gigs. In fact, we did one, you know, H does the room, but also the front room in the Dock Tavern.
Okay, well, we'll get onto that. We'll ask H out that in a second.
But we've already done one gig for the front room with Percy's Pearls, which was great fun.
Brilliant. And I've seen you on Facebook, sort of touting for work. People asking for things and say, "I'm in a duo. I do this."
Yeah.
So that's good. But we'll put details. I'll put a link to your band site on the thing for this once I publish it. So yeah, thanks for that, Tony. Thanks for joining us. And next to you is Mr. H.
Hello,
sir. Thanks for joining us. What is it you do on the local music scene, my man, for the listeners out there, and how do we know each other?
In a nutshell, I promote local and predominantly live music.
Great.
That's my passion and original stuff. Mm. I've been doing that for 15 years through my events called The Room. Mm. You and I know each other from The Room.
Uh-huh.
Some 15 years ago.
We were just discussing that before we started recording, weren't we, about
but I can't remember from exactly where we knew each other, but yeah, we've known each other for a lot of years. I produce a program or a show called The Room, which is held at the Ocean Rooms in Goulston, and it's predominantly a live version of Later with Jules Holland, the style of.
So sort of, I remember the first one we went on with, which we were talking about, was either 2007, 2008. Yeah. We'll look through the posters and find the exact date just to be nerdy about it. But it was, the Ocean Rooms is kind of a round sort of bowl type room.
Yeah.
And you had, at the time, you had sort of three stages, didn't you, that were dotted about. But I guess nowadays, the last time we played, there's kind of tiers to the stage, isn't there? So then one band on, then it switches over to another band. And back in the day, it was very sort of switch between each band. So a band would do a bit, then another band, then you go back to the first band. Is it still kind of like that?
The whole format has never changed. We've always had four stages.
Mm.
And then we've moved to five. We put a stage right in the middle of the Ocean Rooms, which is a bit of a nightmare to put microphones and everything like that.
But nice and intimate anyway. And everything.
But we've now got a slightly different format. But yes, it's exactly the same format in as much as we have five stages, five acts. Four of those acts have to be original artists. Mm. And then my house band, the H Gang, they provide covers through the night. And it's a 3.5-4 hour show.
Wow.
Packed from 8:12 precisely. Through till around 12 midnight.
I love it. Look, the start is absolutely spot on. But the end is like whenever everyone's buggered off drunk enough.
Well, it is, and it runs. It runs like, considering what we do, it runs like clockwork. Mm. Generally, after 3.5 hours, we're not much more than 2 or 3 minutes off schedule.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the biggest problem is trying to find musicians in the breaks between their sets, because some of them might have an hour, and you've either got to go and find them at the bar where they're trashed, or you've got to go running outside to find them where they've now gone out for a smoke, because you have to go outside for a smoke now. And so that's the hardest part of the night, finding people.
Finding other musicians.
Yeah.
And I want to get on to a bit about the pitfalls of stuff like that. And one of them would be, I guess, and I want to talk to Tony in a bit about open mic etiquette as far as musicians are concerned as well. So you have The Room, which is the big room, and then you have the front room as well, which is in another venue, smaller venue, the pub. Dock Tavern,
outside of The Room, I also organise all the music for the Dock Tavern,
mm-hmm.
Which means between us, Tony and I basically we more or less covered the whole of Gorleston for music.
both venues.
Both of them.
I
should have to get another one.
So you are basically the main majority of the Gorleston, which is the next town over from us. That particular music scene. Yeah. And the room's really successful, you know. It's got absolutely massive. And I've seen you like the day after a few of the events, the ones that I haven't been at or attended, and it's a busy night, isn't it? It's draining. I mean,
to go back to the pub. Obviously, I book for the pub in general. Yeah, they're normal, but I also have a night there or a Sunday afternoon called the Front Room. Mm. It's a follow-on from the room in a smaller venue, thus called the Front Room, and it's where an original act might play at the room, but they only get to do seven or eight songs. So if I put them on at the room, it's a bit more intimate, and they can play a full set, or they can play a complete set, or much more. And occasionally, there might be a cover band that I would really love to have at the room, but I can't, because that's my house band. Mm. So I'll put them on at the room, at the Front Room, and people will come to it. Likewise, I'll come to original stuff at the pub, which wouldn't normally attract people.
Okay.
But because it bounces off the back of the room, it knows it has a quality and a certain stature.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. How does one get a slot in either of those places then? Do you seek these bands out? Are you constantly on the look going to other venues for those kind of people and bands? Or do they contact you? Is it a combination?
I have to go out and do some extensive drinking in pubs on a regular basis to find it.
It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it, isn't they?
Fortunately, there is a phenomenally good music scene around this area, and you get to know, and when I say this area, I'm talking about Yarmouth, Gorleston, Lowestoft, Norwich, and place. So you get to know all the musicians, you get to know people, and you find bands. So I go to Norwich to see bands, I might see someone there that takes my fancy. I get quite a lot of emails and requests to play. I get a phenomenal amount of requests to play.
See, now that's something I just want to pick up on quickly, because as an artist and as a musician, we contact venues and places like yourself, and sometimes we don't get any answer, and we get like, oh, fuck them then, oh, and we get the arse. But what we've got to remember, and I think what artists need to remember, is that you're a person with a life and many other things to do, and also, you know, you're not literally just sat on your computer answering emails and answering Facebook messages, are you? You've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And am I right in saying that both you and Tony are, I say retired, but you had day jobs and careers that you are now sort of you're doing something different or at the end of? Are you retired? Are you what's your status?
Well, no, I still work.
Do you?
Not much.
I am sort of, well, actually, I got a different career now. It's part time, but I work at the hospital now.
Oh, fantastic.
In the you know, obviously, I was in the diving industry. Yeah, yeah. Well, in the hospital, you've got a decompression chamber in there,
right.
And I'm one of the hyperbaric supervisors, so I go and run that now and again.
Fantastic. Yeah. And that makes up age. You still, because you were in publishing, weren't you?
With, well, I've done also. I've always worked in design of some description. Mm. Worked as an architect, used to build oil rigs, the interior of oil rigs.
Not with your bare hands, but you obviously...
No, drawing and that sort of thing. So I've always worked in design, and I still work as an architectural designer. But I also still do a little bit of graphic design.
Yeah.
And then I do my music events. That's part of my business.
Well, this is what I think artists need to remember when they get the frustration of, harumph, you know, I've contacted them and they've not get back to me, and I'm fabulous and they haven't put me on their bill just yet. Is that you're real people with real lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not because the musician is rubbish. It's just because lives are full and stuff goes on, you know.
I would generally reply. I mean, I get quite a few... In some respects, it's fairly simple for me, because my first stock answer when I get contacted is, do you do original music or covers?
Right.
And the bulk of bands come back and say, I do covers.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll stop them there and say, I'm sorry, but the room night is originals only. And
That's brave. That's really brave, because anyone, any landlord out there would tell you, like, oh, you know, and... it's got to be covers. It's got to be a covers band. But what you're doing is not necessarily, you know, an average night in a pub like they used to be. And I think that's a brave step. What made you want to take that?
What, for the main room
night? Yeah, yeah.
It sort of came about. I used to run Goldstone Clifftop Gala, and so I ran all the music there,
which was an outdoor festival along our local seafront.
Massive festival.
Ran over the full day or 2 days, was it?
It started off as a day when we started doing it, and then we took it into 2 days. Mm. And it started off as one little arena, and then we ended up the whole of the Clifftop with several different arenas. Mm. Tony used to do
acoustic tent.
Yeah,
he used to do the acoustic tent, and then we would do another one. In fact, my music part, actually, we had a main music stage, and I wanted something a little bit different, so I took this little slot of land in the middle of the Clifftop, put really good food stalls on it. Silver service seafood restaurant on the Clifftop.
Nice. Oh yeah.
And had a cool music stage.
Yeah.
It was my place to go and hide for the day as well, because I get so much.
When was this, guys? Because I didn't get to
Before your time.
Yeah. This, I can't even remember when it was. Somewhere between 95 and 2008, somewhere around. Yeah, yeah. So that kind of period. Yeah. And I kind of got on the idea of the Jules Holland thing. I wanted to do it. And the first time I'd done something very similar to it, I was again involved with Reading Folk Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And 2001, I think it was, a friend and I went along and we filmed it.
Mm.
We shot video, and we produced, or my friend Bob produced, a video of the festival. So I said, well, what we'll have to do, we'll have to have a launch night of it. So we had the Reading Folk Festival Royal Premiere, without any royals, a premiere evening. And we invited everybody to come to the Cliff Hotel.
Yeah.
And the thing was, you had to come in a DJ, an evening gown. It was totally opposite to the festival.
So you're creating a buzz, you're creating a scene, yeah. you're sort of making a...
And what we did within that, I set 4 acts up in a round.
Right.
And that was the first time I'd done it.
That was the first time you did room.
And once I'd done that, I thought, well, that worked really well.
Mm.
And then I was looking for somewhere to do it. The Ocean Rooms was the obvious answer.
Mm.
And I just happened to bump into Russell Edwards, who owned the Ocean Rooms at the time. Mm. And he said, how'd you fancy putting a Thursday night rock show on? And I said, no. Not my thing at all, but this is what I want to do.
Right, okay. Yeah. So you from that moment that formed into a little vision.
Yeah.
That you were you're fairly clear on. So when this guy said, do you want to do that, you said, no, I've got my idea.
Yeah, I've got my idea. Yeah. This is what I want to do. And it has to be a Friday or a Saturday night. You're not just going to get people out on a Thursday.
Do you think he wanted a Thursday because Thursday's a quiet night and maybe you get people in? Is that what these venues?
Yeah, but you can't blame him. You know, you can't blame him. You know, he's running a venue.
Mm.
In the same way, I have no snobbery about cover bands and why pubs will only have cover bands.
Mm.
They're trying to make a living.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bums on seats.
Yeah, it's bums on seats, and without that, you won't have other things.
For sure.
Most kids will start off being in a cover band and then might move on to doing originals.
Well, this is it. It's a
platform, isn't it?
Danny and I were talking about that, about, you know, being in a band sometimes. You would be an all-covers band and then slip the old original in to see if the landlord noticed, to see if the crowd noticed. So someone said, oh, well, I didn't recognise that 4th song in. What was that? Oh, that was one of ours.
Yeah.
Actually, funny that you should say that, because the open mic on Thursday, there's a young lad who's been turning up to the open mics, and he came up to me and Steve, and he said, you know that song you played last time I saw you? It's a song called Roman Candle that Steve wrote. He said, I've been looking all over YouTube and I can't find it. I went, well, keep looking, because you won't find it. You will if you know where. Steve wrote it, so he went, it's a surprise.
Yeah, let's get into those open mic sessions then, because before I get right into it with you, Tony, I want it first defined, because I think like there are a bunch of different definitions of what people's perception of what an open mic is. So I think there were the singer rounds and the folk player rounds that we were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I think there's a jam session.
Yes.
Whereby, you know, some I've been to, they pick a band. So you sign up at the start on a sheet, and then they pick out a drummer, a bass player, a guitarist out of those things. They make a band, and like one I've been to, the Norfolk Blues Society one over in Norwich, they say, okay, we'll have Paul on harmonica, we'll have John on guitar, we'll have so-and-so on bass. And then there's like an acoustic or an open mic night, which you run, which is kind of free. Kind of people come up to you and say, with a guitar, whatever, can I do a couple of songs?
Yes.
And then a couple of bods join in?
Yeah, I mean, that's generally what starts out is somebody comes along and says that they want to have a play. Mm. And you, depending on the numbers that you get there, quite frequently you give them three songs each and go round the room. Okay. And if there's more time, you go round it, you can go round again.
Yeah.
Some people do it as 15-minute slots.
Mm-hmm.
So you get up and do your slot. But generally what happens, if you keep these things going, then people start to know one another.
Right.
And then, you know, if you're like, for instance, if Steve and I were playing and you turned up, you say, Paul, come up and play harmonica on this or whatever.
I literally stayed up the entire night last time I was there.
Exactly.
Yeah. The harmonica in the corner, he'll be all right, he can play anything, he'll do that. But it's nice though, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's nice.
I thoroughly enjoy it.
And as we've said previously, you know, those things, the bands develop out of them, you know, duos and all sorts of things I've seen come out. In fact, the Percy's Pearls thing that I'm in at the moment, that came about because of Steve coming to the open mic.
Right.
So we met there, and we've obviously we've got plenty of other musicians that we want to get.
Well, you've got a little pool there, I guess, from the guys that have come to this open mic situation, haven't you? So how do you, I mean, what was your first experience of an open mic, and where did you get the idea from? Did you attend one?
Yes, that's how it started. I went to one myself, and as you say, I think there's something that's developed over the decades that I've been playing. Originally, you pretty much only got things like sing-arounds and folk clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
Which the folk club thing, a much more formal event where you might have a guest artist on, and then you might get singers from the floor who will come up and do a couple of songs each. But then, as we went through into the 80s and 90s, a lot more places were starting to do the open mic format. Mm. And part of it, I think, came out of comedy. Yeah, because comedy clubs were doing open mics where if you were starting out as either a musician or a comedian and you haven't got a full evening's worth of material, if you want to develop your material, you go to an open mic, do a 15-minute slot, and then you go, oh yeah, that worked, or no, that might.
That's a good one for cutting your teeth, testing what works and what doesn't.
Completely, you know. So you start to develop those things, and I think that's where the popularity of the open mic thing started. And generally, what happens is that whoever's running it provides the PA.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you get a deal with the landlord that you'll provide the PA for whatever you're going to get for it.
You know? So how do you talk a landlord into allowing you to run one of these things? Do you just pick a pub that you like or you think that might
do that? Well, actually, the things that we're running, the landlords have asked me.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, because I've done it in the past and people know I've done it in the past, so they say, oh, well, He knows how to do it, you know.
It
comes down to being asked. And the Bar One thing, for instance, actually the pub got taken over just at the start of the lockdown.
Yeah.
And so we didn't do anything for most of that year. It was pretty much dead, you know, until things were allowed to start up again. But we'd done the open mic in there previously for the previous landlords. And then Daniel, who's got it now, he asked me if I would start it up again, so
okay.
You know, hence that's rolling.
Cool. So as far as like, you know, let's talk about etiquette. So I'm a young musician. I've seen a thing advertised, and I want to get onto advertising in a minute because I know that's something that weighs heavy on anybody running an event, especially what Age was talking about earlier there. So I've seen the advert. I'm a young musician. I've got my thing. What's good etiquette for turning up at open mic and playing at one?
Bring your own guitar if you play, because a lot of people are going to borrow your guitar, and then, you know, some people are okay about
it. No one's borrowing my mouth organs.
Exactly. exactly. I think, you know, some people are quite precious about their guitar or their...
Well, yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot, well, yeah, it can be, can't it? You know, it can be a lot of money's worth. And so some people are not happy about lending their guitars. I usually take a guitar that I am prepared to lend to somebody.
Because if you
might plug your guitar in and suddenly it doesn't work. Right, you know, we've all had that, haven't we?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
With electroacoustics particularly, you know, you plug them in, it worked nothing. 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Stick a microphone in front of it? No, you can't do
that. No, it doesn't work. So, you know, there's that. So etiquette, yeah, bring your own guitar. Make sure it's in tune, you know, before you get up on stage. And don't go up on stage and spend the next 15 minutes tuning it. Because that will piss other people off. Because you're standing there tuning it, wasting the time, the evening. And also, the punters who are listening are going... Get on with it.
So from the instant you get up on a stage at this open mics, especially the ones that you've run, which I love and I've been to for many years, you're learning your craft.
You really
from minute one, aren't you?
Yeah,
as a musician and as an I don't want to say entertainer, but as an artist, in order to get people and hold and captivate them, to get them to listen long enough to know whether or not what you're doing is any good.
Yes.
You know, especially if it's original music, you want to don't piss them off. So don't piss off the artist, otherwise don't piss off the guy running it by taking his guitar, playing it out of tune, and then standing there or tuning it for 15 minutes.
and or coming up on stage pissed out your mind.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We've all seen that happen.
Oh, we've done it.
we've all done it, yeah. We've all been there and done that one.
Frowned upon.
Still do it. Yeah.
I don't think anybody's averse to anybody having a drink.
It's in a pub.
It's in a pub. The landlord wants you to come in there and buy a beer, doesn't he? You know? So that's the whole...
But there is nothing worse. You're absolutely right. For someone coming up and going, even at any gig, to be quite honest, I mean, I've had gigs, mate, give us a go on your drums, give us a go on the guitar. No, this is an open mic night. He played it, he had a go, and it's kind of tough to deal with drunks in any situation, but particularly in that one whereby there does have to be some semblance of order. You know, it's not, you're not running a fascist regime, but you're trying to make it fair so everyone gets a good go, right?
Yeah, and that I think is when you say that having a fair go, that is quite a critical thing that will really piss people off. If you get up on stage and you're supposed to be doing three, and you get up there and do five or six, and you can't, the organizer's trying to drag you off.
You can't see my face, sneering now. Yeah.
Well, you get people who do the. There are one or two names that I won't mention at the moment.
Player, perhaps.
Who just go into? They start playing a song and then turn it into a six-song medley.
Oh wow! It was still only one song. Mate. Three. I've got two more songs left, and each of those are 20-minute epics.
Yeah, exactly. Those are going to... If you start doing that sort of thing, people are going to get really pissed off with you, and you're probably not going to get asked up again.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is the thing. There are, you know, the kind of events that... H is running where they are invitation, where you do have to earn a spot to, and the open mic whereby, you know, that you're running there, that everyone's welcome. They are completely open. When Danny and I have had this, and you know, perhaps Danny could back me up a little bit on this, but what we've been attending a few where people have tried to commoditize the open mic concept. Yeah. So there's ones we went to in a city that we can't mention, whereby there was some we've had two that were great and one that just was I went to I don't think you were with me at this time one that just took the piss. So you book slots online.
Oh really?
Yeah, via an online booking form. The only people attending these events are the other bands. You play three tracks, you don't get paid, you don't get any further promotion in it and stuff like that. They don't mention you when they promote the night or anything. But then we've had some other... When obviously, the guy who's running it has been paid to put this night on and has filled it full of desperate... You know, especially in a city like London, there are people lining up, you know, to be on these things. You've got endless, and they put them on every night of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we've had some other ones which had some really good results. Well, haven't we? The one at Camden Live... was a really good one. We keep getting asked about there. The guy does a whole ton of promo. Really looks after us and promotes us as well. And I think some people, you know, there are some that are commoditising it. And I didn't find that enjoyable, and I don't like being exploited at the best of times.
No.
But yours is a platform for talent, for people to cut their teeth and, you know, ultimately enjoy themselves. And also a platform. It's the absolute grassroots, and I don't like the term really, it's a grassroots of local music, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And a lot of people have started on that route, and I will mention him now.
Well, I wasn't going to say, but Tony does have a fairly famous son.
Yeah, I mean, my son, as everybody in the room knows, is Rag and Bone Man. And I can remember him playing at somebody's open mic. And, you know, when you go to a lot of open mics, you hear a lot of people play, and the bar is a hubbub, and there's noise, and there's some people are listening, and some people are really not.
Mm.
But when you get somebody who's exceptional gets up,
it goes quiet,
and then the place just goes quiet.
Yeah, I love those moments. They're so rare.
Yeah,
they're
and,
amazing.
And I was with in a pub called The Ball down in Newark in Sussex, and Rory got up and played, and within like a couple of bars, the place was silent.
I bet it was.
And it was because he's got a massively powerful voice, and everybody just went, "Whoa, what's that?" You know, and yeah, and the rest, as they say, is history. You
well,
know?
You hear about these moments, and we see about them, you know, in sort of in rockumentaries and in our favourite sort of you know, biopics, whereby that moment where the room goes quiet and someone goes, well, he's a bit special.
Yes.
This band is a bit different. That's a bit something else. And to encounter that moment from your own son as well is real special.
It was quite awesome, yes. Yeah. I mean, Rory started out actually playing drums, playing percussion. He had bongos. When he was a kid, he had bongos and a barong.
He had all the instruments in the world, well,
when Sean and Ben were around, he used to come and sit in and play barong.
Sean and Ben being the other guys who were in our band, Barrel of Monkeys. So Sean and Ben played, hello, Sean, hello, Ben, if you're listening, played fiddle and guitar, amazing folk musicians that were in a band with us back in the early days when we met at one of the singer.
Yeah, and so Rory started out doing that, but the first time I ever played with him properly in a band format, you know, like rock band style thing, was at the old Ship, which is now an NHS walk-in centre or some such, in Great Yarmouth.
Mm-hmm, I know that.
And Rory asked this guy George, "This is a band. There was various people that were in the band or jamming along with the band," and Rory got up on drums, and I actually played saxophone.
Well, I did want to say, but are you on the new album as well?
Yes,
yeah, it's a little acoustic guitar bit.
Yeah, it's an acoustic guitar bit, and actually, the last gig at that he did in Norwich, he got me up to play it live.
Oh, what? That's incredible. And H, you had him as a guest at one of your rooms as well.
I did, yeah. We asked him to come along. Went to a festival with Tony that Rory was playing at. Asked him if he'd come and do it. He immediately put it in his diary.
Did he? See, this is great, keeping it humble, do you know? Yeah. Helping old dad out as well, which is more than I get from my bloody kids.
Strange enough, I was talking to George this week.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. And I spoke to Tim from Swagger.
Yeah.
I spoke to him yesterday.
Tim
Ainsley.
Tim, he's the harmonica. Is he harmonica?
No,
I'm thinking of a different Tim. Sorry. He's a local musician.
He used to be introduced as Tim 15 Fingers Ainsley.
Yeah.
Because he plays like he's got 15 fingers.
He's coming to the front room at the dock during sometime in the summer. And George may be coming to do percussion for the H Gang at the next room.
Oh, wow.
Amazing, getting the old band back together.
Well, he doesn't really. He runs guitar workshops and through a charity thing now. Cause he looks after his boy. He just left the music scene altogether. Amazing drum, amazing band,
fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the quote.
What are they called?
They were called Swagger.
Swagger.
Oh yeah, I remember
the quote. They should have made it. How they never made it is beyond me.
Yeah.
But getting back to Rory came and played at the room, which must have been, because I don't think, I don't remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but it wasn't advertised as Rory being there.
No.
However, it did give the room a huge boost afterwards, and advertising, promotion, and just trying to fill your venue is a pain in the arse. Am I right? Am I wrong? What does it take?
Well, I was talking to Danny about this earlier downstairs while you were making our lovely
warming
cups
up
of coffee.
Rehearsing.
Yes. And at the moment, without breaking down in tears, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, right.
Having said that,
this is a safe place, though. You can cry in here, mate.
Having,
it's all right.
Having said that, before Cuthbert 19,
don't mention the C word.
Well, we anyway, use that C word.
Yeah, that's fair, fair enough. Mate.
So, prior to that, and not really taking Rory's appearance as a pinnacle of it, but prior to that, we were filling the room like without even trying. Yeah. It had built so much momentum, and so many people were followers of original music and would come. Having said that, a lot of people would come because it was a night out. It was also
it's a lovely night out. It's a lovely venue.
It's three things. It's a good music night. It's a night out, and in those days when it was once a year, it was the catch up of the year.
Okay,
people
so
would spend
yeah,
all night wandering around going,
yeah,
I haven't seen you since the last event last year. But we never had any issues with it at all.
Sure.
At the minute, it's an absolute nightmare to try and do, and it takes so much time. It takes so much time to advertise it.
So you're making your posters, you're sticking it on the social medias.
Social medias, it's getting posters. I still get posters and flyers made and dot those everywhere. Well, that takes loads of time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there are people that put their posters out, for instance, the circus or people, they have a team of people that can
they
go
do,
do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't.
Well, it's also a family event and it's their full-time job as well. Yeah. They travel around having those posters done with a blank bit of the bomb ready to go, don't they?
And,
you know? And like we said earlier, you're a man with a family, with a job, with a life, you know, and this is one part of it.
Yeah.
And putting out, let's face it, doing social media promotion, as Danny and I well know, just through trying to promote our own music is exhausting. But doing that in real life and actually getting posters made and taken around shops as well.
Yeah. And then having to change the date, as I've just had to do, because we're due to have a room night on the 5th of February.
We were, Danny and I were playing,
You guys are playing. Mm-hmm. And I've had to move it because people just aren't buying tickets. Totally understand the reasoning behind it.
Mm.
So we've moved it on to March.
March the 12th.
Get down the room. Yeah. I'll put a link to where I'll put a link
boys,
to that.
The boys are on at 8:26. Give or take a second or two.
Just so you know, I'll be at the bar and Danny will be outside having a smoke. That's what we do. I don't smoke. Danny does. He doesn't. I do. So that's what we'll be doing.
They'll either be on at 8:26 or they won't be on at all. So we're having to move it. And hopefully, we'll get the support. We really need the support of people to come along to the event. It's not about making me loads of money.
No.
It's not about anything like that. It's about supporting the live music because it's a struggle. And it's not just me. It's you guys. You've had to change, make different arrangements. All the other acts have, the PA people, the lighting people. It's a humongously vast thing to change the date. Let alone then change all your promotion. I have to get my partner Jules, bless her, she does my Instagram because I just cannot get Instagram at all. So I do my Facebook stuff, I do my website, everything like
that. Walking posters around the shops.
And so I've had to go and make little labels to put over the shops.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the fact you can, I'm lucky I've got graphic design knowledge, I can do it, and I can print it and do it. But you've still got to trace around everywhere.
Yeah, you've still got to do it all.
Remember where they are.
So can I ask you then, because all this is a lot of hard work, and I know that as all musicians who've tried to give up our day jobs for whatever reason, which is the whole point of this podcast, you seem very passionate about putting these nights on, regardless of the setbacks and the hard work, and you're still absolutely determined. What keeps your fire going for that? What is it that you're so passionate? Why are you so passionate about that? Can I get into that? Without the tears. Be tears. It's fine. I love you.
Well, it's two things really. One, first and foremost, I love music.
Yeah, yeah.
That is got to be the most straightforward. Yeah,
explain
thing.
That one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The other thing, which is totally because I don't play any instrument at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my belief is that yes. You have musicians that do their thing. In order for musicians to play, you have to have someone there to put stuff on. So the world of music doesn't revolve around a musician. It revolves around a whole bunch of other people.
And I happen to slot into the person
that puts events on.
So
in the same way that drives me is the same as you two boys, or you, Tony, going and playing a gig and finishing it and going... That was fantastic. Wow, amazing. I stand at the Ocean Room some nights in between the stress and everything else and just go, wow, I've put that on there.
there were 600 people at the last event you ran, and it was absolutely insane. It was amazing. It was a beautiful night. And yeah, it must be to stand there and go, look what I did.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's not being big headed to yourself. Because I can say with hand on heart, I can be sitting at the bar in the pub the next day, recovering, having a pint, and someone will come in and go, brilliant night last night, H.
Yeah.
And I'll go, yeah, thanks. As opposed to, yeah, wasn't it brilliant?
It's hardly, tell you all about it. Yeah, it's hardly for the cue dots, you know.
I'm modest with it. I will talk about the event, Friedland, which is why I'm here today. I can talk forever and ever.
It's your passion, that's why. Yeah. When you're passionate about something, you want to share it with other people. It's not about self-promotion, it's not look at me. It's literally, your job is look at these guys. Yeah. Listen to these guys, isn't it? Tony looks like
I think it's not just the people like H who promote the thing, but I was talking to some of Rory's guys the last festival that I went to.
Proper guys who have given up their day job.
Yeah, who do it for a living. I mean, of course, they've had a terrible time during the lockdown. They've had a really appalling time. Yeah. But, you know, you find just the same amount of passion in the people who do the lights and do the sound. Yeah. I mean, you see some of Rory's big festival gigs with a big light show. I mean, and it costs a lot of money to put that together.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys have got to get it all right, got to get the programming right, the lighting position and all.
Yeah.
And they're as equally as passionate about doing that stuff as we are about playing it.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because there's a guy I know, he's one of the parents where my daughter goes to school, and our daughters hang out, and I was talking to him, and he drives lorries for Westlife.
Really?
And he's exactly the same. He's so proud of it.
Yeah.
And literally, he'll drive for 30 hours straight across Europe, you know, back in the day, obviously. And I don't know where he's driving at the moment or what he's doing. Hopefully, he'll get back to it. And he'll say, yeah, I just drove there. And he says, I just got to stand up in the lighting thing and watch the show.
Yeah.
He's so proud of it.
Rory's tour bus driver, I was talking to him. He's like that, you know. Yeah. This is great, you know, because it's a lifestyle, isn't it? You know, they're doing that
rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy who drives the bus is equally as important as the band.
They totally are.
If they don't turn up at the right time,
and this is what
the gig don't happen, does it?
And I think that is a fantastic point, because it gets right back down to that grassroots of walking into your open mic and remembering that evening is not entirely and completely all about you.
Yeah.
You know, the ego, you have to leave at the door. Everyone is as important. Your audience member, the bar staff, the guy running it, most importantly. Always make friends with a sound engineer. Well, sound engineers and IT guys, I always try and make friends with, because them boys can fuck you up.
The thing with the room has evolved over its 15 years. And a few years ago, when I brought Seth and Simon in to do my lighting, they totally transformed it. Just those two guys transformed how the room looked. And it does look the business. I mean, you know, I'm into my lighting.
You came and did our video for Spa, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have my own little lighting thing, which is like this. For those who can't see, it's very small.
A4 size. I thought every lighting room came like that these days, doesn't it?
And then the guys that do the lighting at the room, they have a nice big desk and works, and it's like, ooh, I kind of know what you're doing, but I rely on them to do it, because that's what they do. And everyone has a little place in putting a show on. When we went to see Rory, the day I went to ask him about coming to play the room, I was chatting to his lighting guy, and I actually went up on the podium with him. And he had, not a desk, he had these five screens about this, and I was going, ooh.
Don't touch.
I mean, just touch something.
I mean, it's like, look, Rory's...
But he was in, just sorry to interrupt, but his enthusiasm...
Yeah.
For what he was doing at that level,
was
exactly the same.
I was talking with Rory's sound guys when I played that little acoustic piece in Norwich, and I was saying, you know, about, because I acoustic guitar, a big room like that. And I said, I've never used this in a big room, so I don't know what it feeds back like, because with my Loudon, which is a very resonant top.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this could be a real buzz bomb here, you know. But the guy comes out, and he's got a a big tablet, which is nearly the size of your
my iMac. Yeah.
And he comes out this thing, and he's standing beside me, talking to the guy on the desk, going a bit less 16K, a bit more this, a bit more less.
Wow.
And he went, yeah, that's got it. How'd you do that?
So you gave me a great insight when we was talking before about that on stage sound, especially at big venues, and I know this is off topic a little bit, but I did find it really insightful, is that on stage at those big venues, it's really quiet because it's all in-ear monitoring.
Yeah,
you not have those wedges that you put your foot on, that you want to put your foot on and stuff like that, and none of that. It's on stage, was absolutely silent.
They, with Rory's rig, they tend to have much less. The sound on stage is actually very quiet compared to what it used to be. You know, when you used to have a whole array of wedges, and very often the guitarist's amp
will be behind plexi,
yeah. And so that you're not getting a big wash of sound across the stage, because that buggers up the mix.
Well, this is it. On stage, there's nothing worse than you've got your guitarists, which we know are always loud, except for the lovely acoustic guitarist of Mr. Danny R, who's always perfect volume.
We haven't
done the electric set just yet. It might completely change, but you're always too bloody loud, a lot of you. So you've usually got this cab blasting across at leg level, and you can't hear the drummer and the bass player. It's like, well, thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
I always love that bit with guitarists, and I don't want to get into slating particular musicians too much, but there's a t-shirt that I put out there, and the dial is at 2, and it says sound check, and then the dial's at 5, it says live set, and then the solo, it's at 10.
No, that's it.
We laugh, but you know it's neither of us disagree with that.
Or like secretly, like I've got a volume pedal.
I thought that was a wah. He's quicking around with that. It's a bloody
volume pedal. Yeah. I think with the big stages, you know, the technology is such now that you. In fact, it's quite weird listening to it from side stage or backstage. I mean, the guys on the last festival I went to, they got a main desk out the front, and then they got a side desk, and those guys were actually listening to it from studio monitors.
Wow.
Because the sound on stage is not what you're getting. It's not front of house mix. You can't hear it.
I mean, I love that. You know, I don't usually like technology for technology's sake, but I do think, you know, we need to embrace it when it's useful. And I'm really fascinated by the fact that, you know, not me and Rude, but you're not young guys, but both of you have embraced the technology on the promotion. I mean, your PA. Is beautiful, that Bose rig is
gorgeous.
Absolutely. And then you talk about the lighting desks and stuff like that, and the system where you get guys in to do that. It's embracing the technology for the right reasons.
Well, again, the sound we've got, the sound we've now got at the room, and that's progressed. I use like 3-4 engineers with their PAs, and in the last few. I have to mention Mr. Paul Johnson, our friend.
Always mention Mr. And Johnson. I'll have to, mention, to get him in for a chat.
And you have to mention what I class as the best music event ever, Club Uniquity.
Club Uniquity. That's why Danny and I are here, to be
that's
honest.
That's part of the reason. I've stole so many bands from Club Uniquity to play the room.
Well, we should get Mr. Johnson in if he'll have us. I mean, I know he's a busy man, but yeah.
Again, it's the PA that he has, and we all feed into his PA. All the desks feed into the one PA, and it's not big, but it fills the room. It's the best sound and the best PA we've ever had in there,
without a doubt.
Because for the people that don't know the Ocean, it's a big round nightclub, and there is a centre section, and then there is an outer ring, and trying to project into the outer ring is a nightmare. We normally put a separate PA in it, but of late, and it's where technology, the quality of what they're building nowadays for this little QSC system he has, and it is, when I say little, it's probably still 12K.
The QSC, is that the make model?
The make, but it's 2 subs each side and 2 tops, as opposed to a stack the size of a planet.
That's I think the difference, isn't it, with the modern stuff like that Bose column system of mine. I mean, one of the reasons I ever wanted one of those, the first time I ever saw somebody using one, he put it in the back of a Fiesta, and I thought, That's the PA, isn't it?
That's the one.
Put it in the back of the Fiesta.
Bloody great PV twin 12s or whatever it is. For fuck's sake.
Do you, I don't know if you remember with Barrow and Monkeys, we used to have those H&H cabinets.
Yeah, I do remember those. Well, the band I was in originally was the harmonica band.
Yeah.
Our manager had a WEM.
Yes.
System.
Well, they were made by the same company.
Yeah, beautiful. But my God, you needed an architect. The cabinets were like 5 feet high and had 3 12-inch cones in them. I mean, and the wood they were made out of, it wasn't some
25
sort of
mil ply. Yeah. They were 25 mil ply, those things.
Yeah. And metal bars across the front of the speakers as well. It was a fortress.
Yeah, you need 3 men and a boy to lift one, don't you, just to get it in the back of the car.
We actually put them on stage when Little Red Kings played a couple of years ago.
As props.
We put them as props. Yeah. It was the speaker, the double two by ten, then with the flared horns on top.
Oh, nice.
And on top of those, this was just for look.
Yeah.
On each side, I had 2 HH MA100 amps, which have got the green
glowing. Oh, they're nice. And I was going to say, the WEM makes for a good aesthetic because they're the red and black.
And it just looked the nuts.
Yeah.
And because I sort of consider their music to be sort of a bit 70s, it was all about how it looked, which... If you don't mind me just saying, it's another thing with the room.
Yeah. Putting on a show.
Putting the show. The backdrops. All the different things. I mean, when Bloodshake played there a few years ago, I spent 3 hours with PAP in the roof rigging up a microphone to drop down in the middle of the stage.
Oh, right. Like boxing kind of commentator kind of thing.
That lasted for 15 seconds. 3 hours to get 15 seconds of wow.
Yeah.
But it's one of the most talked about things about the room.
It's some fine details, man.
And it is.
The devil is in the detail.
And it is the devil in the detail. Mm. And that goes back to as well about sometimes when you have the passion for it, it's not all about making money.
No.
It's... Mm. You certainly need to cover your costs, but it's about making the best show you can possible.
Because I think also young musicians there, and I think that's a point I want to pick up, because I think musicians, especially original musicians, musicians in general, get really paranoid about being exploited. Someone's out to put a show on, and someone's about to use my talent to get tickets, to get bums on seats. And the events that I've attended, and a bit of yours, it's been very fair. It's always been a complete share of the tickets. And the last event Danny and I played there, they shared the thing amongst the individual artists. So the last band had 9 members.
Equal split.
Yeah, you know? So the thing is, what I want to touch on and see what your thoughts are is that... We need to just, no one's just going to buy your stuff just because you exist as an artist. You need to take some loss leaders and get your stuff out there. And I think what we need to talk about is these young artists, these, or any new musician, original musicians, want to get paid instantly. They want instant gratification. I've done a gig, I want money. I don't honestly always think, and I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for this, that's entirely practical. I think you've got to do some gigs, get your name out there.
You have, yeah.
Earn your stripes is what we were talking about in the last gig.
I mean, I don't know if you remember, but Rory did an EP called Wolves. That was his first major release off of the Columbia label. Mm. And they gave it away, first of all.
Wow, okay.
They gave it away. You could get it either as a CD or you could get it as a download.
Right.
And they gave it away.
So they invested that money, invested that time to say, we believe in this guy. And I guess these artists have got to believe in themselves.
Yes.
I guess if you keep going back and there's no pay. So if, for example, we're talking about there's another band or another acoustic duo on the other side of the country listening to this, hopefully, going, there's a guy putting on a gig and he never wants to pay us. Well, don't keep going back. Do you think that might be the answer? Yeah. What do you think to that, H? Being as a man who puts on these events.
I don't know. See, I've always been fair with people because when someone... Either when I contact a band that I want to play or a band contact me, but it's generally the other way around. It's generally I contact a band and the first thing I will always say to them is, it's not a high-paying gig. Mm. You will get paid. But I can't guarantee you how much it'll be.
Mm.
If you're in it for the money, then this probably isn't the place for you to play. Mm. If you're in it for the music, then it's the place to play.
Mm.
Because you'll be seen, and I don't really like the quote, it's a showcase for you, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But if you come to the room and play, there will be people who will see you and enjoy you that would probably never go to see you because they're very genre-minded and where the room is multi-genre.
So you're hitting that, as Danny and I was discussing last time, you're hitting that micro niche, because you and I did, what, 30, 40 gigs last year, 2021?
Yeah.
Like some live stream, some to small audience and stuff like that. And we didn't make practically a dime, did we? It was only one that was a good payer, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think over the course of the year, I mean, out of the 30, 40 gigs that we did, I mean, if I said we got into the low end of a couple of thousand earnings, but obviously that's all the petrol that we spent, mate. I mean, we probably drove 2,000.
We had that one to West Berkshire, was a good one.
But again, it was, our aim was to get ourselves out there.
Yep.
Like what they did with Rory's first EP, it was pretty much give yourself away for free.
Yeah.
In as many different areas and events to begin with, so that when you get called back next time, if you do, fingers crossed, if you've impressed, that's where you can then start exactly where
you might make your connections, where you have a CD store at your events and stuff like that, and merch stand and stuff like that.
Everyone can do their own merch and their own stuff. I try through the night, usually the early part of the night, because Guinness plays a part of the night. I will always promote the people and say, you know, you can go to their Facebook page or their whatever page. It's all about promoting it. It's not just here they are and it goes from there. Because I kind of do the Jules Holland bit in the middle and talk, you've got something to talk about. So what are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about the bands that you've got on and you're passionate about it because you've asked them to come and play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd ever have somebody there that I didn't want just purely to sell tickets.
Thumbs on, yeah. You know, well, this is what we said earlier, it's not about that.
The fact that when Rory played there, it wasn't advertised.
No, it was only afterwards.
I mean, if it had been advertised, you would have probably had 20,000 people trying to get in the ocean room, which is not going to happen.
No, no. 600 seats.
And that was, and I'd always said, from the word dot, and it's the same now, if I ever got someone that was a big star, I wouldn't advertise it. And it's the same thing. I'm in discussions with people, and if at the moment, for future, and if that comes off, it's as equally as big as what we had.
That's what you want.
Yeah. It will never be advertised.
No. Well, at that point, I guess, that's where the point whereby your events turn from, I guess, in the progression of open mics to front rooms to the rooms to, then you're getting on to the festival, and then you're outgrowing your venue, aren't you? Then this is a monster that's kind of not out of control, but something that maybe you don't want, or maybe you don't want to handle it. We'll leave to somebody else to do. We'll leave to the Latitude people of this world.
When you start to break into the bigger end time, like Rory did, he'd booked. That had been booked for probably a year. They booked the studio at the waterfront, you know, the upstairs.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Well, because by the time that he actually got round to playing,
it was
too big for him. And the people were clamouring for tickets, and of course, you couldn't get tickets. Those things are difficult, aren't they? Are they difficult to know what's going to happen like 12 months down the road?
Oh, absolutely.
Who knew we were going to get locked down? You know?
Well, there is that too. But as someone that wants to, maybe someone's listening out there and wants to run an event, run a venue, do what you can manage, do what you feel passionate about, and do what you feel comfortable doing. If you advertise these things, like you say, you've got 20,000 people, that's unmanageable. It's too much, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
where's
the ocean
rooms? We like that.
Might be able to do it on the beach.
Keeps it like special, mate, because it's dedicated people that go to the room. I mean, we'll love that place, and it gets to a point where I don't mind who's playing, because I want to go because I know it's going to be good.
Well, this is what we talked about on another episode, when we were talking about gigging, where we would go, so there would be venues, which doesn't seem to happen so much anymore, but you're kind of changing that for this particular local area, and been sort of ploughing a fairly, along Mr. Johnson and a couple of other bods, ploughing fairly lowly furrows, that every pub would have bands in, and you would go, just like we talked about the Lady of the Lake. You went to the Lady of the Lake on a Thursday night, you know there was going to be a band on, you know there was going to be a blues jam. You knew there was going to be something, and was it?
Yeah, that's right. It was held by Rodney Clark.
Yeah. So, it's about sort of I've forgotten my thread there, but finding something that you want to do, finding something manageable and keeping your passion for it, right?
Yeah, actually, the manageability of it, for you know, if you're going to do open mics, if you're going to run an open mic, you know, it is a commitment. You've got to be, you know that you're going to have availability, or if you're not going to be available yourself, you've got to have some level of backup. Which sometimes, you know, sometimes falls on its bum. You know, you can't, everybody can't always be available all the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes you have to cancel one. But
And let your audience know as well, you know, use your social media, use whatever it is to let people know it's saying that, and keep the communication up, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's where things like Facebook are really useful, aren't they, for that instant communication.
Yeah, you know, can't make it this week, guys, it's cancelled.
Or somebody's ill, you know, that happens, doesn't it? So, you know. Like when you were supposed to play at the
I was gutted. I think it's the only gig we ever
only gig we cancelled. Yeah, my voice gave out.
But it happens. Rory's had it happen to him, so you know it's not. It's not just because you're up at that level, don't mean you won't get a sore throat.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, we're made of the same stuff, aren't we?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, unless anybody wants to have any other points to make, I think it's been fantastic, and I think. Yeah, thanks ever so much for coming along, everybody.
Yeah,
it's been
enjoyed doing it.
Superb. Yeah, it's been great to talk about.
I guess the only thing I'd like to say, if you're listening to this, support it.
Yes.
Go out and support it. I'm saying that at the minute, purely as a selfish point of view, because the room has had to move. Support it. If you don't use it, you'll lose it.
Absolutely. If you like live music, come and see it.
It's everything else. Mm-hmm. It's everything. Every other event.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's really important as well with supporting live music in pubs, because how many pubs have we seen close down in the recent years?
Yep.
You know, we're just about to lose the Albion.
Really? Yeah. My God, I went to see who was it? That duo, that electronic duo, I used to go and see in there years ago.
They're just about to turn that into a Tesco Metro thing,
which we really need
another one of those.
Yeah,
fantastic.
So yeah, support it.
Yeah, support it. Come along.
They won't have a live music counter, will they?
I doubt they'll sell CDs anymore.
Perhaps they could.
We could go and busk by the deli counter.
Dusking the hallway.
100 grams of spam and a couple of songs, please.
That's the dream.
Perhaps there's an idea.
Yeah, there is.
There
is that's what they're doing. Yes.
Tony, H, Danny, thanks ever so much for coming and chatting with us.
Thank you.
And hope to see you again soon. Thanks ever so much.